What that intelligence shows, Maria, is that part of this was a Hillary Clinton plan, but part of it was an FBI plan to be an accelerant to that fake Steele dossier, to those fake Russia collusion claims, by pouring oil on the fire, by amplifying the lie and burying the truth of what was what Hillary Clinton was up to.
Well, that was the director of national intelligence, John Ratcliffe, with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures, one of my favorite places to pick up really good news, by the way, on Fox. And so the heat is on. John Ratcliffe has actually referred a couple of these bad characters for lying under oath to the Justice Department. And now, of course, Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, has referred to justice lots of these people for treasonous conspiracy. Now, we talked about it in part one of this discussion about this treasonous conspiracy. Today, we're going to get into more of what Hillary Clinton actually did herself, what her team did. We're going to talk about the complicity of the media. We're going to talk about the complicity of the Senate and a lot of other things. And so I'm hoping that this will be beneficial to all of us as we remember what they actually did to us as a people. We have been played by our government in a very dangerous way, from the president down to the heads of the intelligence agencies, to the underlings of those people, to the judges and the courts, it's like poison. It has spread. And they spent all of these years trying to hide this and trying to cover it up. And now they're desperate to keep covering it up, by the way, this conspiracy to take down Donald Trump, to destroy his presidency, and in the process, destroy this beautiful country, its security, its system of government. Talk about destroying democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the way it happens. And so today, Bruce and I are going to talk about the rest of the things I mentioned, and I hope you'll stay tuned. But first, you know, children are a gift from God. And every day, thousands of women across our nation are facing unplanned pregnancies with nowhere to turn. Right now, nearly one in four pregnancies ends in abortion, and that's over 3,000 lives lost every single day. But through Preborn Network Clinics, there's hope. These clinics provide free ultrasounds that introduce a mother to her baby, and that moment changes everything. Over 350,000 babies have already been saved through this life-giving work. And it doesn't stop there. Mothers are being introduced to Jesus, that truth thing I talked about. It doesn't matter. It's like if you feed someone who's hungry, but you don't tell them about the bread of life, you've only done a half job. We don't want to just save babies. We want to save people for eternity, their lives and their hearts. So the mothers are very important in this equation with Preborn. Mothers like Valeria, who thought she didn't deserve to have a child until her search led her to a Preborn Network clinic. And now she has a beautiful daughter who is already spreading life to others. This is happening every day because of your generous support. So, all that to say, will you continue to help Preborn? Some of you are doing that on a regular basis. Others of you are doing it occasionally. Can you just consider what God might have you do today, maybe a little differently, more than you've been able to commit into the past, or just continue what you're doing? If that's the case, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. Our home base is afr.net. That's AmericanFamilyRadio.net. But all other podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever you like, Amazon, whatever you listen through, we are there. You can find us on social media, all the platforms. You can follow me on X and my Twitter handle. Isn't that lovely? I remember when they used to start saying that. I thought it was so funny. I could hardly bring myself to saying it. And now I'm saying it. It's at Sandy Rios Tweet. That's at Sandy Rios Tweet. Okay, well, here we go. First, we're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton, so stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
I'm not making any predictions, but I think they've got their eye on somebody who's currently in the Democratic primary and are grooming her to be the third party candidate. She's the favorite of the Russians. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far.
Okay, so you hear that, how she throws that in? Tulsi Gabbard, this is how she sullies her. But I want to go to this now, because we're talking about how Hillary Clinton and her team thought of this idea to link President Trump with the Russians. At the time that they did this, it was a huge stretch. Believe me, it was a big lift for them to convince the American people that this was the case. And I'll make the case here. This is a long article written by Just the News. That's John Solomon's outlet. It's excellent. But let me read a bit of this to you. So public records show that Clinton herself, in coordination with her campaign general counsel, Mark Elias, campaign manager Robbie Mook, campaign chairman John Podesta, and campaign communications director Jennifer Palmieri, and Jake Sullivan, launched an effort to link Trump to Putin in 2016 in trying to win that battle for the White House. So moving down a little bit, Palmieri, after the campaign, wrote an article in the Washington Post. Oh, but before that, Clinton was asked by Durham about the Clinton plan intelligence, Bruce. She was asked by Durham. And this is her response. And she said that, well, it looked like Russian disinformation to me. They're very good at it, you know. That was her comment. She's a good liar. Okay, so Palmieri wrote a lengthy piece in the Washington Post in early 2017 after Trump won. And it was entitled, "The Clinton Campaign Warned You About Russia, But Nobody Listened to Us. Democrats Can Still Fight Back, and Here's How." So I'm going to read a little bit of this. This is really, it's worth it. Trust me. She says, "We," meaning the campaign, "we were in a catch-22. We didn't want Mrs. Clinton to talk too much about Russia because it wasn't what voters were telling us they cared about. And frankly, it sounded kind of wacky," she wrote. "At the same time, we understood the issue would never rise to the front of voters' minds if we weren't driving attention to it." So, Mrs. Clinton, why do Trump's foreign policy ideas read like a Putin wish list? She asked on August 7th of 2016. And then she said, "Seriously, what is going on with Trump and Russia?" And then she said the next day, "We have some questions about Donald Trump's cozy relationship with Russia." And then she shared a video in September 2016 linking Trump to Russia, tweeting, "The man who could be your next president may be deeply indebted to another country. Do you trust him to run ours?" And on it goes, Bruce. And it talks about how they played the press. They actually got into arguments with Jake Tapper because he didn't believe them. And then they talk about how they sent out teams. Jennifer says, "I recall going to CNN, ABC, Fox, CBS, and I think NBC, to train them on how to think about this Russian collusion." So that's how it happened, Bruce.
You know, and you think about Hillary, and you talk about a one-note samba. Everyone's a Russian asset. Donald Trump is a Russian asset. When she was in the primary, if anyone ever remembers Jill Stein, she ran against Hillary in the primary. And what did Hillary say about her? "Oh, she's a Russian operative." She also was in the primary, Hillary, against Tulsi Gabbard when Tulsi was still a Democrat. You got to remember, she used to be a Democrat. And what did Hillary say about Tulsi Gabbard? "Oh, she's a Russian asset. It's well known." So, I mean, if someone is called a Russian asset and you're in the media, I think you better check out whether or not somebody's a Russian asset. And there's many ways to do it. And, you know, this again, we get tired of talking about it, but talk about the fake news and the media carrying all the water that Hillary Clinton needed, or they thought she needed, to get elected. Everybody was in lockstep. All the major all the major networks. And, you know, I remember people like you just being called, like you were from Mars, when you would bring up something to try to counter that narrative that Donald Trump worked for the Russians. Anybody with half a brain would know that Putin sizes people up as a former KGB agent. That's what they do. They look for people they can manipulate. They look for people they can push around.
Useful idiots.
And guess who? Do you think they wanted to tangle with Donald Trump? Or do you think they wanted to tangle with Hillary Clinton? They had already had experience with Hillary when she went to Moscow and had that disaster with the reset button and cackling and really looking like a fool. She made our country look terrible in that interchange. You know, people like John Kerry, all these idiots that go over there and don't know what they're dealing with the Russians. You know, they think somehow they're getting over on the Russians. They're not getting over on the Russians. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump, being a guy that has done business, look, yeah, he has connections to Russia. It's because he's done business over there, and he knows exactly how they operate and how he needs to be firm against them. Hillary Clinton, she's just running around trying to be liked by people and try to look good, which it didn't work out.
You know what? We need to make the point here, Bruce. I've tried to make it before, but it needs to be made again. This is not just about them going after Donald Trump. This is not just about this. This is a corruption of all of our intelligence agencies and the head of those agencies. And I'm going to get into the Senate in a second. A corruption of the judiciary, the FISA court, lying and lying and lying, all of them cooperating to destroy the president. But in the process, they destroyed lots of other people's lives. Many of you, you've heard on this mic. You've heard them, guests of mine whose lives have been destroyed, many sent to prison. There is a destruction in the wake of this, and not only a destruction to individual people, but also to our system of government, and also a disaster in the wake of foreign relations. Our relationship with Russia was destroyed, and Russia then ends up, you know, like going into Ukraine. That wouldn't have happened. Trump is right. It wouldn't have happened if he'd been elected, if they had not undermined him. And so they have left a disaster. Some of these, you know, countries, Iran, they allowed them to just flourish. And the world went wild during this time while our intelligence agencies were focused on the American people and trying to build up and protect Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and the whole gang. It's a very sad story. But I want to talk, Bruce, we talked about the media, and I want to get into that for a second. This is Lee Smith. Now, Lee is the one I quoted when we last spoke about this last week. He is the one who wrote about the annex, this thing we're talking about today, before it was made, I guess, public. I don't know. And I remember Lee wrote that it was the Dutch intelligence that hacked Russian intelligence that made our intelligence agents aware of this this annex and what the truth of this situation was. I think that's really interesting. Well, Lee was on Fox, or actually on with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday morning, and this is what he has to say, and I think it's worth listening to. This is clip 9.
Well, I mean, it's hardly surprising, Maria, because the media was the crucial platform. None of this happened without the media. The issue was not that the Washington Post or the New York Times, that they blew the story or they were lazy. They were an important part of the story. Remember, especially the Times and especially the Post, this was a platform for leaks of classified information. They were part of a serial crime spree run by the Department of Justice and bad actors at the FBI, past and present at the time, 6 years ago. So it's not surprising that we see an article like the one that we saw this week by Charlie Savage and by Adam Goldman, which is running just insane nonsense, misreporting what this Durham Annex is actually about. I just want to make clear what this Durham Annex is about. It's about how the FBI hid information that came in from a trusted foreign partner. Durham never said anything like it was forged changed information by the Russians or anything like that. No, the fact is that the FBI, when this information came in, they hid it. And in fact, it's also a crucial piece of information that the CIA never believed that this intelligence was Russian disinformation. They believed it. So they knew what they had. They knew what it was pointing to. And instead of stopping it, instead of stopping this insane Clinton program to undermine Trump, what did they do? The FBI plotted to get a surveillance warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And that's what led to the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. And I'm happy that we'll have some clarification, I think, and accountability for the American people and for the people who got hurt. People in the Trump circle, like General Flynn, you said, like Roger Stone, like Paul Manafort, like Devin Nunes, like the Trump family. A lot of people were badly hurt by this, but as a whole, it really targeted our constitutional republic.
Yeah, Lee Smith, thank you for that. And he's referring to the most recent New York Times article. Now, let me just say, I mentioned earlier, Bruce, that John Brennan and James Clapper did an editorial for the New York Times about I don't know, a week ago. And they basically said that none of this is true. They deny the whole thing. And the New York Times, of course, printed it, even though it's just, you could drive a truck through what they say. But there's another one now, and that's the one that Lee just mentioned. And this is the title of it. Are you ready? Clinton plan emails were likely made by Russian spies, declassified report shows. So this annex was probably made up, created by Russian spies, Bruce. And now let me read a little bit more. This is Charlie Savage and Adam Goldman. They're the writers of the New York Times. So they make a few points. That's one of their points. And then they say, the report annex indicates that a key piece of supposed evidence for the claim that Hillary Clinton approved a plan to tie Donald J. Trump to Russia in 2016 is not credible. Even as the release sheds more light on a seismic political period nearly a decade ago, Mr. Trump and his allies have wildly overstated what the documents show, accusing former President Barack Obama of treason. And then I'll go on. They make another point here. Mr. Durham was never able to prove any Clinton campaign conspiracy to frame Mr. Trump by spreading information that it knew to be false about his ties to Russia. And then the last one here, the annex shows that the person who supposedly sent this particular email, Leonard Bernardo of the Open Society Foundation's network, that's the Soros dude, told Mr. Durham in 2021 that he had never seen the message and did not write it. The network is the philanthropic arm of the liberal financier George Soros, who has been made out to be a villain by Russian state media and by some American conservative. So that is I can't think of a nice word. That is the garbage that the New York Times is printing right now.
Well, and you know, you think about the motivation for the New York Times and the Washington Post to continue. They have motivation just the way a guy like Comey does. They, being the newspapers, were knee deep in promoting all this. We've heard it referred to in the email within the intelligence community, that we're going to count on the media to do their part.
And how they trained the media.
Yeah, how they train them.
Yeah.
So now, you know, it's going to be a little difficult for those papers to back up and say, yeah, we were wrong or we were involved or anything like that. So you can bet we are going to have nothing but a steady diet of doubling down from them. And that's going to be one of the hardest parts in getting a prosecution, if there are any, given this information. Because we told you before, the very night that this broke, we were watching Newsmax, and we said, let's go over to CNN and see if they're even covering the release of this report. And they were not. It's like it never happened.
They were covering the death of that actor on Cosby.
Yeah. Yep. It was like it never happened. We watched MSNBC the other night to see if they're talking about it. They are not talking about it. And if they do even mention it, of course, it's just these wild accusations. You know, this thing is 10. This is the media is pulling a classic Hillary Clinton too, that, you know, this happened so long ago. Why are we worrying about this? And you know, that's often very effective. So we have to be very careful that this does not slip through the cracks.
To just prove your point even further, Jonathan Turley wrote an article, and he reminds us, he said, the media, including the Washington Post and the New York Times, won Pulitzer Prizes for reporting on the Russian collusion. And they are apoplectic in dismissing these disclosures. The last thing they will do is report on how they helped sell a political hoax. I would say they helped sell treason. The problem is that they never said it was a trick. They said it was the truth. That is why they cannot honestly cover the story. To do so would not be coverage. It would be a confession. It appears that everyone was in on the trick. The U.S. government, the media, even foreign governments. And that's the truth. The British were in on this. The only chumps were the American people. Now we are about to see how it was done. So I thought that was really good, Bruce. And the thing of it is, you know, how in the world do you, you can't charge New York Times with treason.
No.
I mean, if you could, they would have been charged many times in the decades preceding this one.
And that's the problem. They can do the lying for the actual principals involved. Because if they can't do it because they're afraid that they could be charged with perjury or something like that. No, they just slip the information to the paper. Paper goes out, does their, or the network does their duty, you know, says, oh, this never happened. There's no proof of it. And that they're going to say that over and over, and they're going to say that this is Trump. And you know, unfortunately, Donald Trump's personality kind of plays into helping the mainstream media, because Donald Trump doesn't forget anything when somebody wrongs him. And he is very big, I think, on evening scores. And that can be good, that can be bad. In this case, it should be good, because this is something that is important and the score does need to get leveled. And so, you know, they'll just come at it, they being the media, will come at it saying, oh, this is Trump, just, you know, his ego is in the way and he wants to prove that he was right. And they'll dismiss it as nothing.
Bruce, if we, you know, we have such a long list of people who should be prosecuted. A really long list.
Yep.
So each of those would require separate trial. Is that right?
Probably. Rarely do you try people together unless they're actually doing the specific thing that they're being charged with. Now, a conspiracy, you can try everybody together.
That'd be a crowded courtroom.
And yeah, I don't know. I don't profess to know how they're being the Department of Justice is going to handle this. I do know this. I think they need to get somebody who's in trouble to cooperate with them, because there's nothing more devastating when you do a prosecution than having live testimony of somebody who was on the inside. Because if what we have now is we have a lot of documents. And those documents have come from various places. Some have been hidden. Some have been, you know, 10 years old. And people will not be, many people are not convinced by something like that. If you don't have a video of something that happened, or you don't have a live witness, they kind of dismiss it like, well, I don't know. I mean, you say it happened that way. I don't know if it did or not.
It's your truth, not mine.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. You get people on the jury that's exactly how they feel. And they already bring their biases. You know, if you're a Democrat, you want to convince them that there was a conspiracy here. You better have the goods. I mean, you better have the goods times two. And that, again, goes back to your original premise as to who do we think we need to get to cooperate. It would be great if they could get multiple people to cooperate. I have to say that the evidence is pretty, I think it's pretty strong against some people.
I do too.
Now, the problem is if they manage to get a venue in a Washington, D.C. courtroom, well, then they're going to have a pretty good chance of getting off, because D.C. juries are terrible. They hate the Trump administration, and, you know, it's going to be a problem. It would be nice if some of this could take place in Florida, because now you have to remember now the Mar-a-Lago raid, which now we wonder if it was done because they were looking for these documents.
Looking for this annex. That's what they were looking for. That's what we think they were looking for. That whole thing was about the FBI trying to find these documents to save their bacon.
Yeah.
And so that's why they went through Melania's underwear drawer, yeah. I guess.
So if that's the truth, if that's the case, and these cases get tried in Florida, look, there's plenty of liberals in Florida. I'm not saying this is a slam dunk in Florida, but it's certainly a more fair venue. Washington, D.C. is not a fair venue.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe v. Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime. And that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts. And it was an active measures campaign driven from the top of that government. There is no fuzz on that. It is a high confidence judgment of the entire intelligence community. And the members of this committee have seen the intelligence. It's not a close call. That happened.
Bruce, I have another question for you. You, of course, we should restate, when we met actually in Washington, D.C., you were working as an attorney with the FBI, and you were presenting evidence to the FISA court. This is after 9/11. The FISA court was a special court with special rules, a secret court, and honesty and integrity was high on the list. Well, we know now that the FISA court was completely corrupted. So, and they're not the only ones. Judges, we can name names. What can be done about that?
I'm not sure, Sandy. I mean, I think that there have been some reforms done on the court. I think the court, it was embarrassed that they were misled. Some of it, I think, was willing misleading. They let themselves be misled. But I think what had happened is, when I was there, the standard to present a case to the FISA court was beyond belief. I mean, I would often think, we have enough evidence to try to get a surveillance warrant from the FISA court on somebody. And the attorneys that would oversee us would go, no, we're a little short here, we're a little short there. And I would think, that's irrelevant. That's not this, we don't need that. But they did. So they would refuse to submit the application. That's how high the standard was. And you must remember that these applications must get signed off on by people at all levels in the Department of Justice, starting with your supervisor And because you're swearing that everything, and I mean everything in that document, is true. And often the applications were 60, 80 pages. And then it goes up to the higher management. Then it actually goes to the director of the FBI. He must sign off that everything in this document is true. And then it goes to the attorney general, who had to sign off on it. I remember sitting in the, sitting in the outer office while the attorney general was looking at these applications, and I just remember thinking, "Gosh, I hope this thing, I hope it never comes back that there's something wrong in here," because the attorney general himself just put his name on the line. And
Brewster, I remember you telling me there was a case you were building, and they rejected your application because you didn't have the color of the car.
There was a case we were working, and of course, we were in Washington, D.C., where the FISA court was, but the case was being worked on the West Coast. It was out in Oregon, and they were surveilling a potential terrorist group, Middle East terrorist group, that was, they were shooting and doing things to prepare for possible jihad. And so we wanted to surveil them, and so, of course, we've got a three-hour time difference, and these guys were working late at night, and so they would send me their information when they would get done. I had incorporated into the application. We sent it to Director Mueller so he could look at it, and there was reference to a car being used by this group, but we didn't delineate what it looked like, and other than a couple, like what model it was and year. And Mueller sent it back to us saying, "I want to know what the color of the car was that was being used," which, again, wasn't important.
But it's an illustration of how careful they were about accuracy.
So I had to call the case agent, who had probably just gone to bed after being up all night, and say, "Can you tell me what the color of the car was that was used? Because Director Mueller wants to know what the color of the car was." So we got it for him and gave it to him, and he eventually okayed the application. But that, to go to your point, Sandy, that's the kind of scrutiny that these things went under. And when you talk about the FISA court, and what happened is I would talk to these judges after we would finish, and I had more than one judge say to me, "You know, you guys, you don't have to have all this information. You're killing a gnat with a sledgehammer here. We believe you guys. If you say you need it and you have the facts, we're going to give you the warrant." And that made me proud that they thought that highly of the FBI. And there were other agencies that were going to them too, you know, DEA, whomever, CIA. But they stated to me, and they don't know who I am, we met once or twice, you know, and they said, "We think you guys have the integrity that we will give you the warrant." Well, I think what happened is, you know, fast forward to when these warrants were being put in for Carter Page and other people, the FBI took advantage
of the trust
that they had been given by these judges, and they packed it with a bunch of crap, thinking, "Oh, the judge is going to believe us anyway." And that's what happened on these, these applications.
Right. Well, there's one more particular entity that are up to it also themselves, up to their arms, up to their armpits, whatever. And that is the Senate. Some of you will recall, if you've listened to me for several years, that I've told you before that the Senate Intelligence Committee is one of the most corrupt entities in the Senate. Now, I don't know about right now, but it has been. And I'm going to illustrate that. In fact, I'll do it with Sean Davis responded to Hillary's accusation of Tulsi Gabbard of being a favorite of the Russians. But then he pivots to something else. So let's listen. This is clip 6.
Yeah, and it's fascinating when you know what Hillary did. Remember, the whole narrative was Trump was owned by the Russians. The Russians wanted him to win. He was colluding with the Russians. It turns out, in fact, the only campaign that was actually working with someone who was on the payroll of Russians was Hillary Clinton. She hired Christopher Steele to go do this dossier. Her campaign paid for that. Christopher Steele, at the exact same time, was working on behalf of a sanctioned Russian oligarch. And it's fascinating. You mentioned at the beginning this Senate Intel Committee report that came out. You know, I think it was Fox News that reported early on in 2018 that Mark Warner, who was the co-chair of that committee, was having back-channel negotiations with a lawyer for that Russian oligarch, trying to set up secret back-channel communications with Christopher Steele himself. So there's a reason Democrats are furious at people like Tulsi Gabbard coming out and actually giving us transparency, because they know when the documents come out and when the intel community is transparent, their goose is cooked.
Okay, did you catch that? So Warner, the vice chair of the Intelligence Committee for the Senate, of course, he hasn't always been that, but he was that then. He might have been the chairman then. He's trying to talk to Christopher Steele, the guy that invented the dossier, the British intelligence agents helping Hillary Clinton try to take down Trump. So he's doing that. And then the Senate Intelligence Committee releases their report. Okay, so I'll take it from here. This is a statement that Vice Chairman Warner from Virginia made after Tulsi Gabbard made her pronouncement a couple of Sundays ago or a couple of Saturdays ago. It seems Director of National Intelligence Gabbard is unaware that the years-long Russia investigation carried out by the Senate Intelligence Committee reaffirmed that the Russian government directed extensive activity against U.S. election infrastructure ahead of the 2016 election, and that it used social media to conduct an information warfare campaign in order to benefit Donald Trump. This conclusion was supported on a unanimous basis by every single Democrat and Republican on the committee. It is sadly not surprising that DNI Gabbard, who promised to depoliticize the intelligence community, is once again weaponizing her position to amplify the president's election conspiracy theories. It is appalling to hear DNI Gabbard accuse her own intelligence community workforce of committing a treasonous conspiracy when she was unwilling to label Edward Snowden a traitor. So Mark Warner is coming out, both fists, fighting back, and that's because they signed off on the same thing, and he knew exactly what he was doing. Now we know that he was trying to, on the sly, on the QT, contact the Russian contact Christopher Steele, the British agent who was writing the dossier. So it's dirty. It's very dirty. And I just think the only answer for that is that these people need to be out of office, and the American people then have to be informed. And that's why we're spending so much time with you today, trying to make sure that you're informed about this. Honey, one last thing. On that burn bag, what do you know about that? And do you think, I indicated earlier that I think it's probably some, back to the FBI, some good FBI agent who did that, some actually bold FBI agent.
I am of a split opinion as to what happened with that burn bag. Just so people know, when things that are sensitive or top secret or whatever need to be destroyed, they are either put through a government-grade shredder, or they're put into what's called burn bags, and then the contents of those bags eventually is thrown into an incinerator and burn. In this case, I don't know whether these documents were put in that bag, not intended to be burned, but to be there in case something like Tulsi Gabbard came along and started to disclose things, and whether it would give certain people plausible deniability. Like, I didn't get rid of that document. Here it is right here. But hoping that would never happen, and that eventually they could burn these documents and get rid of them. I have a hard time believing that if they really wanted them destroyed that quickly, that it wouldn't have been done immediately. They wouldn't have been put in that bag and just burned up. So I don't know, Sandy. Whatever it was, I can tell you this. Those documents were not properly entered into the FBI database. When we create a file, like if I say I go out and interview Steve, and I come back to the office and I create my document of my interview. These are my notes. And we save our notes, and then we write the report based upon the notes. And once my copy of my report is initialed off on by my supervisor, it is electronically loaded into a file. And it can be researched, it can be retrieved based upon keywords in that document. And that's to give transparency. These documents were never loaded into the digital system, from what my understanding is.
So the annex, the Durham annex.
The annex was not put into digital. Mm-hmm. It was made a hard copy report. In other words, it was the pages that the information was written on. But it was just like a document like we would have years ago, where all you did was have hard copies. It was not entered into the digital system. And, you know, you have to understand that that was done for a purpose. That was done because the people that had pulled this misdirection, this false flag, never wanted these documents to see the light of day. And so that's why I'm not sure why they were in this bag. If that's how they felt about them, I would have just burned them. But we'll see. At some point, we'll know why those documents were in that burn bag. But let's draw this conclusion. It was not for a good purpose. It was not to have transparency. It was not to explain the situation. It was to cover somebody's behind. And we're going to hopefully find out who that was.
So we have now a grand jury forming. We also have John Ratcliffe has referred some people for lying under oath, I believe, for perjury, to the Justice Department. And so that's coming up, too. So there are things to be hopeful for, because truth is going
to
come out.
Because it's been my wish. Unfortunately, it's been my wish. Christopher Wray, the former director of the FBI, who has figured out that he should keep his mouth shut and fly under the radar. You know, I find the dichotomy of how people that are in trouble because of this situation are handling it. You've got people like Brennan and Clapper and Comey, especially, that cannot get out in front of the press enough and say, I'm not guilty, I didn't do anything, this is Trump, he's crazy. And then you have people like Rod Rosenstein, Merrick Garland, Loretta Lynch. These are people that are up to their ears in this, and they have Christopher Wray, and they have gone quiet. And I really think they're hoping, look, if they come for scalps, maybe they'll go after the big mouths and be satisfied and leave us alone. But in the words of Clay Higgins, Director Wray, your time's coming.
Your times are coming.
And I can't wait. I love Higgins. Okay. So I hope his hope comes true. Christopher Wray is in trouble on two fronts about lying before Congress. One of them is in regards to, if you recall, what we called the Catholic memo. And that was where, out of the Richmond division, a memo surfaced that people going to Catholic Mass in Latin were being considered domestic terrorists. I don't know why, but they were drawing that conclusion.
Because they're speaking a foreign tongue.
And somebody blew the whistle that, what happened is the Richmond office authorized their agents to go out, and they were infiltrating Catholic Masses. They were taking pictures of license plates of people who were attending. They were gathering information on who was there. And then this became known. And, of course, the Catholic community was outraged. I don't blame them. You know, how dare you infiltrate our services and intimate that we're doing something wrong. So Director Wray was brought in front of Congress, and he was asked about this. And Wray said, oh, no, this was a one-off. It was only the Richmond division, and I immediately stopped it, and it's done. And now we've found out that it was not stopped. It went to other, I don't know offhand which other divisions it went to, but I think there were like three other divisions within the FBI that were doing the same thing. And Christopher Wray had to have known that. And when he went in front of Congress and testified under oath, he stated, no, no, we've stopped this. This was a one-off, and it was just in Richmond. So he's got some exposure there. And
I do think also they expanded it not just to the Latin Mass. I think it was Catholic pro-lifers, too. And we saw them do that. We saw them surveil pro-lifers, and some of them were put in jail. So it just got worse and worse. So that's okay. If he's in trouble for that, that's okay. If that's how we can bring justice to him, that's fine with me.
Well, you know, as they unpeel this onion, the layers could really get interesting because you don't do something like this without having tons of people be involved. And that's another way we can look for a weakness to possibly get somebody to cooperate is if you were involved in this, but maybe in a peripheral way, but you had pretty good knowledge of who was doing what, and the government comes to you and says, look, you're in trouble, but not a whole lot of trouble, and you might be able to walk away from this thing if you help us on this prosecution. I know a lot of people don't like that, but that's the way the game gets played. This happens all the time, like in mob cases. Sometimes we have to let somebody go in order to get multiple people. And I think as they peel this onion back, you're going to find somebody who was sitting there in FBI headquarters going, I can't believe this is happening, but wanted to keep their job and kind of went along for the ride. I'm not excusing them, but they are the type of person I would target to cooperate on this investigation.
Well, it'll be interesting what path they take, Bruce. We'll all be watching. I'm concerned Pam Bondi must be absolutely overwhelmed. And because the nominations are stalled in the Senate, they don't have as much help in the Justice Department. So we need to pray for them, pray for their energy, pray for their health, and pray that they're able to take this to completion. And I would say, you know, it's not just on them. We see people. I'm just telling you because I'm not close. I don't want to overstate this, but I have some closer relations with things going on in the White House, things going on in Washington, D.C. People are just working so hard. They're killing themselves. And I think we're sitting here, you know, reaping the benefits of their diligence. We're quick to criticize, but we're slow to do anything ourselves. And so my challenge to all of us is to figure out, I've said this for years, but you can do something. Be proactive. Share these articles. Make sure that this story doesn't die. You know, there's a midterm election coming up, and if we should, meaning I'm talking about conservatives, should lose that midterm, this could all be totally dismantled. And we can't let that happen because of our relief at the pressure we were under and thankfulness. Now we've got to double down and make sure that it doesn't swing back the other way.
Well, so, and you know, the left's theory on how to defeat this is, again, a false flag. What they're saying is that the only reason that the Republicans have declassified this information now is because they, being the Republicans, are afraid of the Jeffrey Epstein files. And they want people to stop asking questions about the Epstein files. And so they brought out this thing about what this conspiracy amongst the Clinton campaign. Now, we all know that nothing could be further from the truth. We've been screaming about this conspiracy for 8-10 years. This didn't just start with the Jeffrey Epstein files. But that's the kind of thing your neighbors, I'll hear it from people. They go, oh, they just don't want to talk about Epstein, so they're going to talk about Clinton. They know nothing. They hear a soundbite, and they go with it.
Yeah, I got a Facebook post from, I don't hardly ever do Facebook, I'm just telling you, but a friend sent this to me, from a former staffer at Willow Creek, where I used to go to church years ago in Chicago. And it was just a diatribe of absolute lies. It was very long about, but it was hatred for Trump, how he's done this, how he's done that. He's a dictator. He's a this. It's just amazing. And he's sharing this. And that's very disturbing to me. And so don't assume that people of faith, a lot of them are not paying attention. And I think they're probably not fulfilling their role of Christian stewardship, Christian citizenship. So it's time for us to kind of push the buttons a little bit and get them to step up to the plate and pay attention. Well, there's a lot of information today. Honey, thank you for joining me. Thank you so much.
Well, it was my pleasure, and I really hope, I pray that this goes to where it needs to go.
Yes, so do I. And I want to thank all of you for listening. And I hope that you were able to make, I realize it was a big, it's a huge plate load of information. But I hope that some of it you can share, just share the things that you can remember. Maybe make notes. Some things will make more sense to you than others. You don't have to know everything. But make sure that you share this with your family and your friends so that the truth can be, you know, spread abroad. That's what we're all about doing. But I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because they help us put our money where our values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you, honey, for joining me. And thank all of you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.